you know, payment limitations and actively engaged rules are a really important tool that have been around for, you know, several decades. And some of the things that they roll back in this bill have been around since 1987. And they're kind of a cornerstone of efforts to make sure that subsidies are targeted at the farmers that are most in need, but also they are helpful to, if done right, to protect against the rapid consolidation and expansion of the largest farms. What happens at its core is that if subsidies are unlimited, you know, farms can get upwards of millions of dollars in federal subsidies every year. And what this allows farmers to do is to capitalize that money into their operation, and that allows them to bid higher rents and higher land prices in their area, which allows them to outcompete other smaller farmers and beginning farmers that might be trying to buy land. So we have a situation with unlimited subsidies that, you know, a farm that is several thousand acres, 10,000 acres or more, and if they're able to get more subsidies because they have more acres, subsidies in Title I are based on base acres, so your planting history, and so therefore you're paid on every single acre, you can get upwards of millions of dollars, and this allows you to not spend that money that you're getting on other things on your farm, which frees up capital to bid on land prices. And what we're trying to do is essentially that farm that's 10, 20, 30,000 acres, those the largest percentage of farms, those people have admitted in press reports, you know, that there's no way, if I want to bid on land, that a beginning farmer, a smaller farmer that has 1,000 acres or a couple thousand acres, depending on where you're in the country, can't outbid me because I can leverage all of this land to raise the capital that I need. And so, you know, going back to 1987, there are rules put in place that say that corporations, if you are a corporation, that you only get one payment limit. Currently, that limit is $125,000. In the last farm bill, these rules have varied, and there's been a debate about this and during every farm bill going back to 1987 and before. So the corporate rules put in 87. Now, the 2014 farm bill set the limit at $125,000. But exempted family farms, which is mixed well over 80% of farms are family farms, and only applied a specific set of actively engaged rules to joint ventures and partnerships. So essentially, you have a payment limit, $125,000, and then you have something actively engaged. So the payment limit is $125,000. It's doubled for a spouse. We're at $250,000 with a spouse, and then you add two farm managers plus their spouses, and then you're upwards of $1 million then that a joint partnership or venture can have. But there's these additional rules that go with this: is that these farmers have to be actively engaged. That means they have to do a certain they can't just be calling in once a year. To a farm manager's meeting and do that. But we also know that even with the actively engaged rules that are in place out of the 2014 Farm Bill, that there are thousands and thousands of quote-unquote farm managers living in cities like Chicago and New York City. So we have a situation coming out of the 2014 Farm Bill where the vast majority of farms are exempted. So if you are a family, you can bring in your brothers, sisters, parents, children into the farm and get multiples of those $125,000 payment limits. So that's where the situation is now. We have that corporate limit. We have the family exemption. You can have as many people getting a payment, payments as you have family members. And then you have the joint venture rules, which were added in the 14 Farm Bill, which are stricter, but yet still allow people that don't even live in the farm and very often to be considered farm managers and getting payment limits as well. So that is the current situation. This farm bill just basically wipes all that out by allowing corporations to now get, if you're an LLC or a subchapter S, to get multiple payment limits. So that $125,000 limit per corporation would be gone. So you could get multiple millions of dollars. They changed the definition of family to include cousins. So not only can you now bring in your parents and your kids and your brothers and your sisters, you can also bring in cousins and extended family. So that makes that exception even broader. And it also exempts certain types of farm payments, loan deficiency payments, and commodity program benefits. That marking loan gains and loan deficiency payments essentially exempts them from the rules. These are mostly used only in marking loans are really only taken by cotton and some other southern farmers. It's not the prices that these programs pay out mean that corn and soybean farmers basically never take these loans. So that's another way to expand payments to the southern areas of the country. And it also loosens the rules on another part of the law having to do with adjusted gross income. We've taken the kind of strict rules that we have and then taken them to wide open, you know, loophole that you can drive a combine through.
What would the coalition like to see going forward?
You know, we would really like to see the committee and Congress go back to what actually was passed on the House and Senate floor last time around in 2014. So back when the last farm bill was passed, there was an amendment offered on the House floor, an amendment offered in the Senate by Senator Grassley and Congressman Fortenberry in the House that passed. They passed and were added to the bills that said it's one farm manager. So it's, you know, one owner and one farm manager no matter what. You know, simpler rule, you have to be actively engaged, you actually have to work on the farm, you know, and you have to, and you get a farmer and you get a farm manager. You know, that is what the majority of the House and the majority in the Senate passed last time. It was added to the bill, but during conference, that was dropped. And they went with this other rule that exempted all family farms and put in, slightly stricter rules for these joint ventures and general partnerships. That was clearly not as good as what was passed by the House and Senate, but it was at least something, because those, to give you context, those joint ventures and general partnerships that it actually put some rules on are only make up about 4% of farms, but they get like 14 or 15% of payments. So they get an outsized amount of the payments, and so they targeted that. But they also exempted all family farms, and you know, the family farms can be, you know, a few acres. They can be a mid-scale farm, you know, 1,200, 2,000 acres, 3,000 acres, depending on where you are in the country. And then you can have the large and very large. There are tens of thousands of acres, and you know, that's where we're saying is that we need to prevent those largest farms from having unlimited subsidies so that they can outbid and prevent beginning farmers to enter the program. I mean, you know that the average age of a farmer in this country is around 60, you know, and everybody wants to bring beginning farmers into farming. They want to do everything we can to help beginning farmers. You know, we have beginning farmer programs, we have trainings, we do lots of we have special loan programs to help beginning farmers, yet we're also, this bill basically encourages those biggest farms to get bigger and make it harder for those beginning farmers to bid for land. They don't have the capital. They don't have land to leverage. You know, they don't have government payments they're already getting to help them buy land. And so we're doing all this other good stuff, but we're also working against them by allowing this kind of these unlimited payments. I think that was a point I wanted to emphasize, and also want to emphasize that these kinds of limits means testing and limits have been, you know, in Title I for decades and are bipartisan. You know, these wouldn't pass, and these common sense, you know, kinds of rules wouldn't pass without bipartisan support. And I think that, that we're hopeful that a bipartisan process can put some basic sideboards on these policies. We want to make sure that these programs work for farmers and help the farmers that are most in need and don't don't put beginning farmers and mid-scale farmers in a further hole than they already are, given the state of the farm economy.